Hi, this is Rory O'Connor, creator of Rory Story Cubes and co-creator of the Extraordinaries Design Studio with Anita Murphy, and you're listening to Family Gamers.
This episode of the Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com.
Gamers Podcast.
We did it!
It's episode 100!
Episode 100 is here! Woo! It is episode 100 of the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely, amazing, and long-suffering wife, Anitra.
That's me.
We are so pumped for this episode. We've been looking forward to this for a long time. We've got a lot of really cool stuff. We have some amazing people who have called in and left us some really sweet messages congratulating us for episode 100, and we'll share those with you over the course of the show. We also had some of our contributors who write reviews for us on thefamilygamers.com do some quick little interviews with us, and we're going to include that too. And we have some awesome giveaways that we have been collecting stuff for. It's going to be a good time.
It's going to be great. But first, what we've been playing this week.
As always, we're going to start the show with the stuff that we have been playing. Big mix today. Some games we liked, some games we didn't like.
Yeah. Some grown-up games, some not.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have been playing Goblet Gobblers with our local Agent of Chaos.
Right, our three-year-old. So I find it amazing that this game, which is essentially like a more complicated tic-tac-toe game,
it's tic-tac-toe with captures.
3-year-old has managed to actually beat you, like, legitimately at this game.
Legitimately. The first time he did it, I was just like, oh, maybe I wasn't paying enough attention. I need to step up my game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time, he managed to back me into a corner so that he had two different ways he could win. I swear he wasn't even planning it. Uh-huh. I actually had to point out to him, I'm like, look, you can win here or you can win here, which means I can't block you in both of those spots.
Right. Well, there you have it. I don't really know what else to say. I mean,
it shows me that it takes your basic tic-tac-toe, and you can either play it strategically or you can just be kind of random like your standard tic-tac-toe, and either method could work to net you a win.
Sure. We actually have a couple of different like tic-tac-toe derivative games that we really seem to enjoy. Like Goblet Gobblers is an example. We have Pocket Ops too.
Yep. And our older kids really enjoy Slideways, which
mm-hmm.
is a...
Yep.
It's another... That one's a 4 in a row.
Right.
And OK Play.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we've definitely found a lot of different variations on the X in a row.
Our sadly broken copy of Connect Four.
Yeah, you know what? Since getting OK Play, I don't think Connect Four has come out again.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah,
maybe it should go in the trash.
I'm all for it.
Because it's a terrible game, just because it's broken.
And it's another slot on the Kallax for another board game.
More room for games.
So,
what else? So, we pulled out for the first time a game that we got in for review that's mm-hmm. called Where's Mr. Wolf?
From Blue Orange Games.
It is a cooperative game. It's a cooperative memory game
mm-hmm.
from Blue Orange.
Nice.
Which I found really interesting, like cooperative and memory games don't usually go together. It is super cute. It's got a pretty decent way to change up your difficulty levels. And it's definitely one of those that's best played if you are quite young or older enough that you have issues with memory games.
Like your mom.
Like my mom.
Yeah.
Our 7-year-old stepped in and started playing, and he's like, come on! Like, well, you should know
hold on,
here.
But our 7-year-old is also the one that...
he's also the master of memory
games.
He's
unbeatable at Chicken Cha-Cha-Cha.
But it's a memory game that also kind of feels like a press your luck, because you're flipping over these tiles and then putting them into barns, and you're trying to fill up each barn with the right kinds of animals.
Ostensibly to protect them from Mr. Wolf.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to remember what you've already put in the barns so you don't overfill them or underfill them.
Sure.
But there's also either 2 or 3 wolf tokens that are hiding in with all the face down animals. And unlike the other animals, if you flip over a wolf token, something happens. The wolf moves up the score track or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But then you put him back into the pile of face down animals.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So
cool. Awesome. Well, speaking of cute games, a game that we have talked about on the show a few times and on Instagram and on Twitter and on Facebook and everything else, the T-Dragon Society, we finally played that with the kids. Well, you played it with the kids.
I played it with the kids.
So we've introduced the T-Dragon Society to the age range that, at least in theory, the game is designed for.
Yeah. I think we might have talked about this last time.
I don't think
with
so.
Steven, but they really enjoyed it,
mm-hmm.
and we played until there were no cards left to buy,
right.
and then ended the game.
Right.
So, almost every turn, the kids were like, oh, I can spend my resources and buy more cards.
Right.
So,
which is a very kid thing, right?
I mean, definitely.
The idea that you ever bring a kid to Toys R Us, well, soon not anymore, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
They want to spend every dollar. It doesn't even matter what they're buying half the time.
Yeah. Honestly, the T-Dragon Society card game lends itself well to that because you can't buy any cards that are bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
The only cards that are bad for you are baked into the starter deck.
Right. But it's good that they saw the game, they understood the game, the deck building mechanic. Was something that made sense to them. I mean, did they play Daubers with us? I guess they didn't play Daubers with us when we were trying that out.
Yeah.
Did they?
Okay. Yeah, and so they've been introduced to deck building before, but I think this presentation of it probably made a little more sense.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So that was T-Dragon Society from Renegade Games.
Yep.
That is, I think that's going to be a hit for them.
Well, I saw that they pretty much sold out of it at Origins.
Yeah,
so,
I am not at all surprised.
So.
Yeah.
You know, it's super cute and the gameplay is solid but not particularly challenging. So, yeah. Nice
all right, so
game.
So what we're going to transition now from a game that we really, really loved to a game that we thought that we were going to like and then we didn't.
Kind of ended up meh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ink and Gold, which had been recommended to us after a previous podcast many moons ago. Ink and Gold is a press your luck game that doesn't use dice.
Yeah, it's great. It's card based, and so essentially, what you're doing is you are a group. You're a group of adventurers. It's not a collaborative game. You're a group of adventurers that are going through an Incan temple, trying to collect as much gold as possible. So every turn, the next card is flipped face up as you're progressing down the path
into the temple,
and everybody has the option to choose whether they're going to turn around and return. Home or to the camp, or if they're going to continue down the path. And some of these cards are good. They're money, and the money ranges from like 1 gold to like 20-ish.
Yeah.
Occasionally, there are certain artifacts which are, kind of the most expensive things.
Well, I think they're only worth like 5 each or something like that. Oh, and unless everybody has pulled a bunch of artifacts, then they start being worth 10.
Right. They get progressively more expensive. But there's also cards that are like traps.
Lots of hazard cards.
There's like hazard cards, right? There's like this weird freaky zombie doll thing. That thing was creepy. Falling rocks, lava, spiders, etc. Now, the first time any given hazard shows up, it's okay.
Yeah.
But the second time, anybody who's still trying to go deeper...
Everybody dies.
Everybody dies.
You lose all the treasure that you would have gathered in that round.
Right. And if you did decide to turn around and return successfully before you were tripped up by a second hazard of the same type, all the money and stuff that you gathered is split between all the people who decided to turn around at that point.
Yes.
Anything that's left is split.
Yes.
And then you get to put it like in your cute little tent. Like the tent thing.
Once you get back up to the surface, yeah, you have a little tent that you can put all the treasure that you got this round in.
Right.
The thing about Ink and Gold is that much like one of our favorite Press Your Luck games, Deep Sea Adventure, the first person to turn back has a distinct advantage that they, in Ink and Gold, they get to get any of the leftover treasure that's back along the path. They collect that all on
right.
Their
so
way
the
back
and
up.
And the way that that happens is as you're going down, when you flip a card over, the amount of gold might not divide evenly between the group.
Right.
And so basically everybody gets an even amount rounded down. The leftover is left on the path. And so that person who turns around, they get to collect everything on their way back up.
And they can collect any artifacts that are on the path. You can't bring the artifacts down into the temple with you. You can
only
take
one.
Them on the way back up.
Right.
So the first person to turn back has a distinct advantage, you know, and you're missing out on the prospect of more treasure, but you don't really know if there's going to be more treasure. Everybody might just die. So there's definitely an incentive to turn back
sooner-ish.
Sooner, yeah, I was gonna say relatively early, but then you make everybody mad at you.
Right. I mean, look, I think that's part of the strategy of the game, right?
Yeah,
and so I don't have any problem with that. Ultimately, the thing with Ink and Gold is Deep Sea Adventure is better.
Yeah,
and there's
fine. It just we've played other games that feel similar. While also feeling more balanced.
Right. And I could not conceive of a time when I would want to play Ink and Gold over Deep Sea Adventure
right, exactly.
for basically any reason. And so ultimately, you know, maybe if we hadn't played Deep Sea Adventure first, we would have liked it better and then it would have, you know, occupied a warm place in our heart.
Or something,
or something like that, but you know we're all in on Deep Sea Adventures, so I think Ink and Gold just couldn't stand up to the challenge.
I think the difference boils down to although Deep Sea Adventure does use dice, Deep Sea Adventure you always know if you pick up treasure that it's going to be treasure. There's a few of the very early on ones that could be a zero underneath,
right?
But you always know if you pick up treasure, it's going to be treasure. The pressing your luck part is instead, am I going to make it back?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Ink and Gold, it's literally, it's all or nothing, but kind of in the other direction. It's, do I try to get more treasure or am I going to die?
You know what? I think my take on it is it's probably the same as what you're saying, but there's no rush in Ink and Gold, right?
Right.
As the turns are going around in Deep Sea Adventure and you're watching that oxygen
there's
tick
not the
down.
Same, there's not the same there, tension
there's a
in
tension
Ink and Gold.
And you're like, oh my God, you're going to kill me. Like, what? Don't pick up the. Why are you picking up that treasure? We're all going to die. What are you doing? Right.
Yes.
There's all this treasure.
Yeah, there's
treasure.
More interaction.
There's all this interaction and like this tension. And it just makes it for a way more fun game.
Yeah.
And not just like, oh, you're staying here. Oh, we're dead. Okay, next. Yeah,
you flip one card and everybody dies.
Right.
Like, luck.
Yeah.
We're dead again.
You know, I mean, that's the difference between a game like Pandemic and a game like Pandemic Legacy is that there's so much more on the table when you're going through the game, right?
Yeah.
In that case, it's because things are permanent. But in Deep Sea Adventure, like, you're invested in every single thing that happens.
Yeah.
And not just like, all right, let's just burn through another round. Okay, oh, we're going. Oh, and that's the other thing is like the whole... It's just awkward to collect the cards and wait until everyone's ready and reveal the card at the same time. It's just kind of like this.
Yeah.
It just wasn't necessary. I mean, it's an old school way of playing a game and the new school is better. And you know, that's kind of a weird way to say it.
That is,
I guess
that is kind of a weird way, but I guess
but
I see
like
what you're
that
saying.
That kind of simultaneous reveal mechanic, like it doesn't really add anything to the game, but it's necessary for the game
for
because
the
of the
mechanic,
way the game
yeah.
is constructed. And it's just kind of obnoxious.
Yeah.
I'd actually rather roll a die. Sorry, Art of Board Gaming.
We have one more game just to tease to you a little bit.
No, we can talk about it. We're allowed to talk about it. We just can't publish a review.
Okay. Well, we got a chance to play Jetpack Joyride,
the
board
game. So, all right. I mean... Like, let's address the, you know, the elephant in the room, right? This is a licensed game.
Yeah.
Okay. And a lot of times, licensed games are hot garbage. I think of, what was that Justice League Road Rally.
Oh, that was terrible.
That game was awful.
So bad.
And so, you know, I really wanted to play this game because I played a lot of, I mean, Jetpack Joyride is the perfect poop game. Let's admit, like, I'll just be honest with you. It is. It's, you know, I mean, it's the right.
It's an
endless runner.
It's an
I mean,
it
really,
runner. It's one of those where, you know, simple enough for a toddler to play, but challenging. I mean, because it's an endless runner, it's challenging enough for anybody.
So, it's being done by Lucky Duck Games, which is Vince Vergundine's company, and he's a super cool guy. And you know, they just had that ridiculously successful Kickstarter for Chronicles of Crime. So, I had a lot of faith in the company that was doing this. But at the same time, I was like, how are you going to do Jetpack Joyride as a board game?
How do you turn an endless runner into a board game?
Yeah. And so,
I think we can say, spoiler, they did a really good job.
Yeah,
somehow
it was
they turned
really
an endless runner into a like timed
puzzle strategy game.
With polyominoes.
That's a cool word. Episode 100, polyominoes. I like it. But yeah, it's really fun. I would, you know, I mean, we can't publish a review yet. We will when we're allowed to. This is a game that's going to hit Kickstarter. And I mean, if they properly convey how fun it is to play this game, it's gonna do just as well as Chronicles of Crime did.
I hope so, because honestly, this game is pretty awesomely fun.
It's pretty, pretty excellent. I cannot wait to show this game to the kids.
Yes. We haven't gotten around to that yet.
I mean, we've got our memory guy. That's Ash, our 7-year-old. I'm the spatial one, right? I seem to figure out the spatial puzzle thing pretty well. I'd be curious to see how our 9-year-old does with it.
I'm pretty good at the spatial puzzle, but there was definitely something about Jetpack Joyride that defeated me. Although after I got the hang of it, I got better, just not as good as the other adults I was playing.
Yeah, I mean, the game clicked for me. I think in the first round, we were playing a 3-player game. In the first round, I had substantially more points than both of you combined.
Yes.
The game just clicked for me instantly. Really liked
and
it.
And then we started gaining on you.
Yes. I really liked this game.
Yeah. We'll leave it at that. Expect to hear more from us and see a written review in a few weeks.
I don't recall what the date is, but you know, we respect our publisher friends. So, all right, we're going to go into a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to play some of those interviews that we talked about with some of our friends who write for the site.
Yeah,
be right back.
Hey, Andrea and Nitra, this is James, half of LittleMeeples.com. Congratulations on 100 episodes, that's a big accomplishment. And we just wanted to thank you for all the inspiration you gave us to play games with our families, and also for us to share our experiences playing with our kids and share that with all the other people in the world through our own website. And good luck for the future, and we're looking forward to hearing another 100 from you guys. Take care.
Hey guys, we are back, and we're here with one of our writers, Corey Lagunowicz, is with us to talk about the Family Gamers and his experience as a family gamer. I mean, he's broken our microphone, but I think we got it back together, and
sure,
hopefully this will work. Hey Corey, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going? I'm a writer.
Yes, you are, and we very much appreciate it, although you've had a game from us for a while.
Yes, I know. I'm also... very behind.
You're also a late writer, but
yes,
that's all right.
I'm a very late writer.
Anyway,
you're also a parent.
You're also
yes.
A parent. Right.
I have built-in excuses, 5 of them.
That is 2 more than us, so good for you. All right, so Anitra has some questions. Are we rapid-fire questions, or are we just going to...
super rapid-fire.
All right, so we're going to ask you some questions, Mr. L.
All right.
And you can answer them as curtly or as...
lengthily.
Longly.
Longly.
Not curtly.
Not curtly.
As you would like.
All right.
Go ahead.
Well, let's start with, what's your earliest memory of gaming?
Yes, well, so, like 63% of America, I do believe that is a correct statistic, my very first memory of gaming is playing Monopoly with my grandfather.
Monopoly is better than Candyland.
Yeah, that is true, yes.
That's fine.
Yes. Yeah.
I've blocked out all memories of Candyland. But yes, it's playing Monopoly.
That is the Family Gamers approved method. Yes. Of remembering Candyland.
It was playing Monopoly with my grandfather. We did not play by the rules. We thought we were playing by the rules, but of course, like the other 30% of America, we didn't know what the rules were.
So no auctions, yep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, once I probably should actually, like, we should play the game straight.
Absolutely.
Just to...
Yes.
Hate ourselves in the morning, yes.
Experience a completely different game than we've been playing for the last 25 years.
I think part of the point is if you actually play Monopoly right, you can play it as a fairly speedy game.
Sure.
And be done in, like, an hour.
Right. So, but I would be remiss to... not mention that, though that's probably my earliest memory of gaming, the one that I have the most fond memories of from early in my childhood is Daytona 500.
Sure.
And that's pretty famous here at the Family Gamers because one of my favorite reviews that I've ever written for the site was Downforce.
Yes. If anyone has read that review, you are already aware of Corey's love.
Yes.
Right. I mean, I will say the editing process was rather lengthy because I had to wipe the drool stains the review. But it turned out.
I had exceptional bias towards that game. However, yeah, so Daytona 500, and I still have my original copy. It is on the top shelf of the house. It is the one game in the house that I do not let the children play without adult supervision. So
wow, that's I guess it's functionally irreplaceable, and you don't own an original copy of Fireball Island.
Correct. So, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that would also have been one of those.
Yeah, that would have been way up there. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's your early memories of gaming.
Yeah.
Did you keep playing?
What's the last game you're going to play before you die?
No. Come on.
Woo.
Not quite that dark. No, did you keep playing games all through your young adulthood, or did you get back into the gaming hobby as an adult?
Yeah, so when I was in college, I did play a little bit of board games, although mostly college was devoted to playing Nintendo 64.
It's valid. Fair. That's a perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, so I've officially aged myself now. You can look that up. Right after getting out of college... my wife and I, we got married, and we moved to Pittsburgh, and we had two other young couple friends who went to our church, and we got together every single Friday night, just about, and for my birthday, one of the couples bought me a copy of Carcassonne. And Carcassonne, not Catan, Carcassonne, it's a little bit better. Carcassonne was the game that got us... completely back into board gaming and turned us into board gaming addicts again. And so that Friday night with the friends turned into playing Carcassonne just about, and it became a bit of a running gag that at every possible potential holiday, whether federally recognized or elsewhere, someone was buying me a Carcassonne expansion.
Sure.
So I have all those expansions now. And so we played a lot of Carcassonne, and then someone got us Ticket to Ride, and off we went.
Yeah. Excellent.
You're the one who introduced the Pennsylvania map to us.
That's right.
Ticket to Ride, and that's pretty baller. And then
that's our new favorite.
What's the England? Is that what's coming? Or I can't
no, remember. The Pennsylvania and UK map are the same.
No. But the one that's
the
coming.
New one that's coming out is France and
France,
Wild West.
France. I think it's France is the one.
France is the crazy one where you build the tracks as you go.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Have you played Isle of Skye yet?
No, I have not.
Okay, we need to introduce
you to
that.
We're going to make that
happen. Yes. Isle of Skye is the Carcassonne replacement.
Right, I know, yes. Yeah, I agree. So.
Well, this is kind of a silly question, but how did you get into writing for the Family Gamers?
Sucker.
Well, no, to be fair, Corey was one of our first review. He was the first reviewer besides you and me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And he was there pretty much at the beginning.
Yeah.
Just about.
I mean, shameless bribery on Andrew's part, I think, is...
look, I mean, I'm
that's
not...
That's what I'm remembering.
I'm not ashamed of it. It was shameless. That's fine. Absolutely.
No. So, yeah. So, Andrew is my best friend now here in Massachusetts. And so, when he told me about this awesome Family Gamers thing that he was getting going and starting to write the reviews all the time, I said, oh, yeah, that sounds... very interesting, and I'd very much like to do it. And I mean, it's a great opportunity to get to try out new stuff. And what I really like about writing for the site is that we have this emphasis on reviewing the games in terms of playing them as a family, like with our kids,
right?
Which I think is something that not all board game sites really necessarily get into. And, you know, so we are always looking at, you know, are the age recommendations on the box really the right age recommendations? Mm-hmm. You know, depending on your kids' own personalities or play styles, how are they going to deal with these games? Yeah. And so I really enjoy that. And as I mentioned, I have several playtesters at home who help me out with that. So,
yeah.
And one who eats the pieces.
And one who eats the pieces.
I mean, one of the things that we try really hard with our reviews, as you know, is we have one of the rankings is family fun.
Right.
Right. And so, I mean, I'm pretty shameless with my love for games like Zulkin or Twilight Struggle. Sadly, although I would play those
family
games,
fun rating is
exactly yeah. right. Yeah. And
it's
part of the average. Right. And so it really our reviews are absolutely biased in the sense that a game that is better for families, even if it's not as high quality of a game, according to BGG or whatever, could get a higher rating.
Right. Absolutely. And as a dad gamer now, I've got this really fresh new perspective when it comes to playing games about, like, how easy are the rules to understand? Mm-hmm. Like, how intuitive are they, right? Like, how easily can I pick them up? How quickly will my kids understand them? How many times do I have to explain it to them? And then the other big one is, how quickly can I get it set up? And how quickly can we tear it down again?
Right?
Because a kid will come down and say, hey, I want to play Zooscape, and that's a great game to play because we'll have that thing start set up in a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. We'll play it for 15 minutes, and then we throw all the cards back in the box, and we're done.
Can I say, by the way, how happy I am that that ended up with you? Because we played it, and we're like, this is fine, and it's super pretty. And they're like, Corey,
it's gorgeous.
Check this one out. And you were like, this game is awesome, and let me tell you all the reasons why.
Yeah.
So that was a good one.
Good move giving that to Corey.
Hey,
good
job. Whatever. What can I say? Yeah, so like you said, I mean, Corey and I are best friends, and it's really hard to get adult gamers together when we have kids.
Right.
And you have kids.
Right.
So we start
to exceed fire codes in buildings.
That's true. That's true. Right. We have a tradition where we get together on New Year's.
Yep.
And we let the kids watch one too many movies.
That's correct. Yes.
Stay up until many, many too many hours late.
Right. Irresponsibly late, I believe, is the official word. Yes.
Sides. Yeah. And, and that's kind of our annual hurrah to get some good solid adult gaming in. You know, we have gaming groups here pretty regularly, but all of the gamers that we import have no children, so they don't have anybody at home that they're with a few exceptions,
right? Yeah,
so man, I wish we could play games more.
We should,
just a logistical nightmare to figure those things out. So
I know.
The last thing on my list was, what kind of games do you like to play with your family now?
Oh, I just answered that question.
Other than just games.
Games that take a really short amount of time to set up. Yes. Other than games that I'm reviewing for FamilyGamers.com. Can you shamelessly plug your own website on your own podcast?
I think that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah, but I mean, is it shameless to do that?
Sure. We are the official podcast of FamilyGamers.com.
Yes. Excellent. I love it.
Perfect.
All right. Well, anyway, let's see. So we do really like playing co-op games in our house. Mm. If anything, because it avoids that uncomfortable sadness at the end of the game when someone has won and someone has lost.
Sure.
And you know, in our family, you know, we're trying to foster, you know, this sense of like cooperation and, you know, camaraderie amongst our kids. And so co-op games really, you know, help that out a lot. And then the other thing that's great is that when you have a big age range of kids and you're playing co-op games, then the younger ones can be brought along by the older ones and still feel like they're, you know, part of the team success, and everybody can cheer at the end, because most co-op games, unless you're playing the brutally hard adult ones, will result in, you know, a victory.
Eventually,
you can win them. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Cool. Awesome. Yep. Well, I mean, thanks so much for coming on and talking about games and, you know, what you're doing for the Family Gamers and what it's like to play games in your house. We really appreciate it, and we really appreciate what you do for the show.
Thanks.
All right. So here's to episode 100.
Woo!
Yay!
Thank you. Hello, Smith family. This is Ryan with One Board Family. And just want to say congratulations on 100 episodes of the Family Gamer Podcast. This podcast is so cool because it is a way for families to get together and to find new games that will unite them around the dinner table. I really enjoy listening to the podcast week to week, and you guys do a great job of getting the kids involved, and it's something that you don't normally see on podcasts around our hobby. So congratulations on 100 episodes, and hopefully we'll get 100 more from you guys. You guys keep on gaming.
Hey guys, so we are back, and now we have with us another writer from thefamilygamers.com. We have Nick Martinelli on the line. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hey, how's it going, everybody in Board Game Land? Great to be with you guys.
So we have Nick write for us because he plays a ton of games that somehow, I don't know how this happens, but they're games that are like on my list of games that I really want to play, but I haven't managed to get to. Nick is like, hey, what do you think if I write a review about this game? And I'm like, hey, bro, that would be awesome. Also, I want to play that game, so I'll just read your review and then wish I was playing the game.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Gaming by proxy.
It's what I have to do these days.
Tell me about it, man.
I game vicariously through other people. It's awesome.
Yeah, same here. Especially like the Facebook groups and people are, you know, live cast, and it's like, oh man.
You know, that's one of those killer things about Origins, which is happening right now, is people are like, yeah, hey, check out my Origins haul. And I'm like, hey, guys, check out my Amazon wish list. Like,
hey, guys, check out this game we're playing that was released 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's like, man, I have to feed my children instead of
Origins, dude,
and buy cool games.
The parenting struggle is real.
It is. It is indeed. But we are the Family Gamers. We love our kids and we love gaming with our kids.
Yes.
And so we've got some questions that we want to ask you. About kind of your gaming life.
Awesome.
And I'm going to let Anitra take it away.
Okay, I will.
Rock and roll.
So, Nick, I was going to start with, what's your earliest memory of gaming?
Oh, my Lord. All right. So I got a couple good ones. I'm not going to, and Anitra, I know you are a huge, huge fan of this one. It starts with a C, and the second word starts with an L.
Oh,
and if
no.
you put them together... certain color matching kind of thing, but yeah.
And you burn it in a fire.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember, unfortunately, yeah, I was one of those kids, I'm sure like everybody else, that was probably their first one. It will renamed unnamed, but that was one of the first ones. But like, fast forward a couple years when I got a little older, I think the most visceral gaming experience I had, I remember from a kid playing with my folks, and my sisters are a little younger than I was, so mainly my folks, was Fireball Island, man. I remember getting that for like, I think it was Christmas or birthday or something like that. And I just remember playing the heck out of it with my parents and just having so much of a fun. And I'm like, I don't even know that we were playing right at the time, because I think I'm, you know, when the game came out, I think it was like 86. So I probably was in, I was 6 years old, probably like kindergarten, maybe first grade. So reading probably wasn't all the way there. So we were just playing, knocking marbles all over the place and stuff, and just remembering just how awesome that was, and just getting that excitement of, you know, there's a little marble's going to knock down little dude, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think the other second, like, favorite one was with my dad. My dad, you know, me growing up in the 80s as a kid, you know, being exposed to those action movies earlier than probably we would normally do that these days. But, you know, when Mad Max was on TV, all that kind of stuff. It always be in the background. You know, it was a different time back then.
It really was. I agree.
Wasn't it? You know, and, you know, there was violence, but it's not like it's violence like it is now. So, so I give my dad a pass on that. But I remember also playing this awesome game called Thunder Road, which was like a Mad Max car gladiator game. It was just roll dice, move a car, try to knock the other guy out. And I think I actually remember, like, we're sitting at the table one time. I think Mad Max was on in the background and we were playing this game. And I don't ever remember beating my dad. I think he just obviously being an adult knew what was going on and, you know, did that one.
Well, good for him for not throwing the game to you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he never threw checkers games with me either, I think, come to think of it. But I think those are my two most memorable ones, is Fireball Island and then Thunder Road.
Nice. Did you stick with playing games a lot as like a teenager and young adult, or did you kind of taper off for a while and then get back into it?
It definitely tapered off. I probably hit the same thing you guys did. So back in, what was it, 1987-ish, original Nintendo came out, and then my world like exploded. So, you know, it was just video games. That's when I think I kind of grew out of like playing with like some of the action figures and stuff, but got the original Nintendo. I mean, I remember being at like Chuck E. Cheese playing Nintendo, you know, like Mario Brothers on the arcade machines. And then, yeah, got Nintendo, had Super Mario Brothers, and then, of course, then came along, you know, that epic quest that is The Legend of Zelda, and the rest was video games.
Oh. Andrew's Zelda fanboy is showing.
Oh, it's bad.
I know. That's why I purposefully mentioned that. I knew that would tug at his strings.
You know, that's really weird, though. I mean, you mentioned something a little off topic, I guess, but
yeah.
What is it about playing the exact same game that you have at home in the arcade and it being like a completely different experience? Like, what's the deal with that?
No idea. It was weird because I played Mario in the arcade at first, and then I played it at home, and yeah, it's really strange. Even like, you know, playing Donkey Kong. Donkey Kong was like the worst. I was horrible at that. But I think my other favorite game, like arcade game, that also transferred over to console was Rampage. I'm a huge Rampage fan. Like, I mean, even when I got PlayStation, as I got into like, you know, high school or college, I mean, I remember playing with my girlfriend, now wife at the time. We played hours and hours of like Rampage on the PlayStation, but. Yeah, it's
are you gonna take her on a date to go see The Rock's movie?
Oh yeah, we're big Dwayne Johnson fans over here. So
really, so you've got Dwayne Johnson and Rampage all in one. Ticket.
Exactly. Yeah, The Rock. Dwayne Johnson's awesome, man. If you guys didn't see the new Jumanji movie, holy moly, it was awesome.
I'm planning on seeing it eventually.
It'll come to Netflix or something. I mean, that's a movie that'll come to Netflix.
It's definitely worth hitting Redbox if you guys have Redbox out there in the East Coast.
Oh yeah,
we're not total hicks.
Yeah, I'm on the country. I'm like an hour outside of Chicago, so I got plenty of farmland around where I live out here.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, but yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, how the video games, you know, the arcade versus console. I don't know. It's always more comfortable playing at home on a couch.
It's funny because I like that question's super easy for me. What's the difference? Is the difference is my parents let me play arcade games, but they didn't let me have a console at home.
Right.
So consoles were only for playing games at other people's houses.
I mean, I didn't have a huge library either. I mean, I had some of the big titles and stuff. Then some of my friends would have the cooler stuff. I remember going, I forgot the name of the drugstore, but there was a drugstore that actually rented like Nintendo games. It was like a dollar for 5 days. And I remember like getting Guerrilla Warfare and Indiana Jones and all that kind of stuff.
I remember renting games from video stores, and that was just like, it was such a magical experience.
It was like going to the store, like, you know, a whole wall of like games, and I can pick anything I want and, you know, and play it.
It's kind of like, what's the functional equivalent of that nowadays? I don't even know.
I will say our kids kind of get that same look on their face when they see the shelf of video games available at the library.
Home. Yeah, all right. And I don't have to pay for anything. Yeah. So that's awesome. Kidding.
All right, I had no idea.
And they're like, I can pick this and bring it home for 3 weeks? Like, yes, you're probably only going to get in about 3 hours of playtime in those
games. But, yeah, right. Yeah, sure. I'm with you guys in the screen right. time thing.
I mean, I just like that. I mean, that feeling was such a unique feeling, right? An irreplaceable feeling to go to the store and because I would hold something in my hands and I would know that it wasn't mine.
Right.
But it was like this little treasure, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't mine. So it was irreplaceable.
Yeah.
In my whatever 10-year-old logic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was magical. I swear, man, these poor kids, I mean, they go into, you know, now it's like going to Target and they got the big screen TV with like, they can demo Mario right on the spot. So. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, even those experiences, going into Walmart, playing the N64 controller that was never attached correctly, so you couldn't use the buttons you were supposed to.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yep. Yep. Trying to do like, yeah, the Super Nintendo display at the store. Oh, yeah. And that's even when I remember when they had the video game stores at the mall. I can't think of the name of it. I had like little, it was a small Babbage's, I think it was called.
Well, there was Babbage's, really there was Software, et cetera.
Yeah.
EB Games.
Yep.
Right. Yes. Yes. I remember those.
All of those eventually became GameStop, basically.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
The juggernaut that is GameStop. Who now sells board games.
Yeah.
It all comes full circle, baby.
Doesn't it? It does.
Strange turn.
Very strange turn. But yeah, it's crazy how Zelda has like, you know, has still kept, you know, the popularity. Same thing with Mario. Like these epic titles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have Zelda swag on. I have lots of tchotchkes that are Zelda related. I have
awesome
Hylian Shield in my office. I have It's unhealthy.
Our kids also know, like, if they can't figure out what to get for dad as a present, they're like, something with Zelda on it.
They're totally. Yeah, dude, I'm the same way. I'm like, you're a Zelda fanatic. Like, I am a Transformers, like, geek. I grew up, you know, with the Transformers. It's a huge part of me. I'm a big collector. You know, I have 8 billion Transformer shirts. My wife would probably wishes I didn't, because that's all I wear around. You know, we go out for dinner. She's like, oh, you're going to wear that Optimus Prime shirt. Can you maybe put on the polo shirt when we go out for a nice dinner? I'm like, okay. Same way, man. Though, unfortunately, I'm not allowed to have all my stuff's relegated to the basement in my man cave. So,
well, yeah, my stuff's in my office. Yeah, same thing.
Okay. His all right, so you're in the same boat.
I mean, are you like passive aggressive? Like when you're having a bad day, it's a Decepticon shirt, or?
No, I'm kind of equal.
Okay.
It's been a lot of Dinobot lately since Jurassic Park coming back. So,
like when you're really mad, okay, Starscream's going on. I don't know.
Yeah, right. totally. It's funny. And it's amazing, like my kids, my daughter is so stinking cool. You know, like when she was younger, you know, her and I would watch, like she knows all the old bot names. It's like makes me happy as a parent. Mm-hmm. So I would put on a shirt. Oh, yeah. Hey, that's Starscream or there's Thundercracker. I'm like, yes, parenting win. So,
yep.
But yeah, don't even get me started about Transformers. I wish somebody would develop like a Transformers legit board game. I have like this one from like 1984 that's so, talking about tchotchke, cheesy. I just bought it just to have it to the, you know, the collection of like Transformers swag, like you have Zelda stuff. And I'm wishing somebody would develop like a legit Transformers like board game, like a legendary thing would be really cool. Just give me 55 expansions of cards that I can just collect.
I mean, I guess it is. It's an intellectual property that that you could do that with. Right. Well, I mean, there's kind of the whole they're Hasbro, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So there's this concept of the Hasbroverse where like somehow Transformers and like Mask and G.I. Joe are like all related in this weird way. And then you could put them all together and do some whacked out stuff.
Yep.
I know there's like a Transformers Mask, I think comic or something coming out.
There's a lot of whacked out comic like, crossovers though.
Yeah, the G.I. Joe Transformers. I have a couple of those too. But yeah, just imagine the epicness that would be like Transformers as a board game. So, so I hope they call me to ask for input and playtest because
that would be better expert.
55 pages of notes, and you've got to keep true to the lore. You to the lore, right. The mythology that is Transformers.
We need professional help. I
know. See, yeah, Andrew, we like start a support club.
Yeah, it's fine. We're off topic, but we're totally on topic.
It's totally okay. But let me back up.
Yeah.
So, Nick, let's tell the listeners how you started writing for thefamilygamers.com.
Well, I think it was I've been a fan of you guys since like your early episodes, a couple of years now. I've been listening to you guys, and I think it was last year you guys sent out like a, you know, like the hey, how we doing survey. And I think I remember putting like a comment and they're like, hey, can I get involved somehow or, you know, help contribute or something? Because I'm just a huge fan. I love what you guys are doing. You guys help spend my paychecks occasionally. You know, games for the kids.
Hopefully not too often.
Sorry, Lisa.
Baron Park recently, but
yeah,
totally game is worth
so,
it.
So, but was it worth it?
Oh, totally. It was a lot of fun. I lost miserably, but just the fun of playing it. And my wife usually wins like the first new game. So if she wins, like it's good. You know, we'll get her going. So, you know, but yeah. So I think it was when I submitted that survey, and I just was, you know, when then you guys responded back like, hey, I'm like, yes, I'm totally on board. I would love to do this. I used to write, I had my own website, theshredzone.com years ago. It's no longer up. I used to do like guitar and heavy metal related reviews and CDs and products and pedals and guitar strings and picks and stuff. So it was fun to, you know, get back into writing again. So I enjoyed doing it before, and then kids came, and then, you know, life changes. So.
Right.
But yeah, I'm so thankful that you guys asked me. It's a lot of blasts, and I just love what you guys are doing. It's cool to be a part of it.
Absolutely, we love having you. So it's good stuff, and I really want to get a copy of Century Spice Road.
Oh, it is
really
so
badly.
Yeah. It is
like really bad.
It is the Splendor killer.
That's fine. I'm not a huge Splendor guy anyway. We play Splendor on iPad Pass and Play.
Oh yeah.
And that's about it. We had a physical copy of the game, and it was just...
We realized it sat on our shelf for a year, and we never played it because we just grabbed the iPad to play instead.
Right.
So
let's
traded that one away.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I played it. I just joined a game club here, like, two towns over from me, and they're meeting Saturday, and somebody had picked, like, have you played this? And my buddy comes with, and he's like, I never played it. I'm like, all right. So I taught him, and they got a kick out of it. So, but it's not bad. Just Centuries is so much more thematic and fun.
I saw that. East Century something or other is out or like about to be out.
Yeah,
or something.
It said Origins
stuff is coming out. Yeah, so I know if you want to get them all, I know that was something you said you wanted to do. So
right, and then you can combine them together from what I've been reading too. Like, I'm curious to see how the
gotta catch them all.
Yeah, yeah, yes. It's that collector habit, right? But no, I'm like not a collector. I'm not a board game hoarder.
You just keep telling yourself that.
No, I'm like you guys. I'm meticulously like, and thanks, you know, thanks to podcasters like you guys and other podcasts and like, you know, YouTubes and, you know, these Facebook groups and stuff. We're all in. It's cool to see all the stuff. So you can kind of like not try it before you buy it, but see enough of it to see if that'd be something you would be into. And yeah, it's a huge, you know, I try to like, you know, try to spend my money wisely too. I don't have an infinite bank load either. You know, everybody else, you know, that works and has a family and stuff. And so, yeah, I will read reviews. I'll go on BGG and, you know, and try to, you know, play it before I can buy it. But there's a couple, you know, those gems you hit once, like, yes, I just have to have this, you know. Right. Century was. I didn't play it. I picked it up on an online, you know, online game store for a steal. And, like, it was, yeah, totally worth it. Well, even Baron Park, I bought that purely off your guys', you know, love for it. So I didn't even play it. I was like, all right, if you guys say it's good, it's got to be good.
Well, I'm glad we could help with that. So that kind of leads into the next question, which was going to be, what are your favorite games to play as a family? So with your wife and with your kids.
All right. So I'm going to have to roll out the scroll here. No, I'm just kidding. definitely.
Just a few.
Just a few. Yeah, I got a couple. Probably first and foremost, recently, if it's Fireball Island, like my father-in-law loved the guy to death. God bless him. He is a self-proclaimed pack rat. So for the last 30 years or so, or whatever, 25, 30 years, I think close to, saved their family's copy, my brother-in-law, Danny's copy of Fireball Island, and kept it in their attic at their old house. And we unearthed it. It was a weird conversation we had like a year and a half ago, and somehow mentioned it. I'm like, yeah, we have that in the basement. And my eyes just like popped out of my head. Like
wow.
You have it? So we went downstairs, brought it upstairs, and like, you know, fanboy geeked out. I'm like, holy moly. So, you know, we play that a lot here. So I'm very fortunate to be lucky to have it. We're missing one pawn. But, you know, I got my friend 3D printed us like a, you know, a little mimic of one and nice. Good enough, you know, right? But so that one gets a lot of play. I'm super stoked for the reissue that's coming out this year. Cannot wait. So I think that's like my game of the year I'm looking forward to, mainly because, you know, the whole family aspect of it, like my kids really like it. You know, my son's turning 5. He can't read yet, but, you know, we help him with the cards and just, you know, watching their excitement of playing and like, ooh, I'm going to knock dad down or I'm going to knock mom down and all that stuff. So I'm looking forward to that one. So that one's a huge one, gets played here all the time. And again, thanks to my father-in-law, you know, God bless him for saving it for all these years.
And did you know that you can use atomic fireballs in that game instead of the plastic ones?
Ooh. That's an idea. And eat the fireballs after you hit somebody.
Yeah, it's in fact, not only the way that I found that out was, as you know, I went over to the castle back during PAX East and was able to to check out the
Lucky Duck.
I thought you did you not get a chance to check it out too when it traveled?
No, because it hit Chicago and it was weird. They didn't have the times posted and I was Googling. I could not find like the other one of the game stores listed on anywhere on the internet. I was Googling it, couldn't find it. And then just, you know, driving from where I live into Chicago is like, you know, an hour and a half trek with traffic and stuff. And it just timing, so just unfortunate timing.
If you weren't 100% sure, then you weren't going to do it.
Yeah, and the timing, you know, just timing was bad and probably poor planning. Yeah, I totally regret it. But I did sign up for 2 sessions of it at Gen Con coming up in August. So
all right. The way that I found out about the Atomic Fireball thing is that when we were checking it out at the castle, the guy said, so there was this thing about the old game where you could use atomic fireballs. And so when we made the new board, we made sure you still could.
Dang. That's like some cool inside information, man.
That's a pretty deep.
That's a deep
game retro cut right there.
Yeah. So. Holy moly. My mind is just blown right now.
So there you go. So, and of course, to prove it, he had a giant bucket of atomic fireballs.
Ah.
And we used some.
That is so cool.
So.
See, these are like the fun stories. Like, you know, yeah, we get all the gaming and like, you know, the board cool. It's like the cool hearing all like the oddball, you know, off the kilter kind of stuff. Like, never would have thought like atomic fireballs and Fireball and mind blown, man.
Right.
That's so cool.
And who knows if they did it on purpose to begin with, but it works.
Yeah.
So they perpetuated it.
Did it on purpose now.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
So cool.
So what does your daughter dig Fireball Island?
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah, they love it when they can you know trash me or my wife or just each other. You know, like my daughter likes they like going my daughter and son like you know, going after each other like ooh I'm gonna fireball Izzy or Jace is gonna fireball you know dad or whatever. So yeah they get a kick out of it.
All right,
nice.
You know, like I said, he's five. We just help him read the cards a little bit, and I'm like, yeah, play that card right now on your mom. Do it. So
you're like father of the year.
You're the devil on the right shoulder, I can tell.
Totally, man. It's just fun. So yeah, Fireball Island's a big one. And then another new one was from last year, Go Nuts for Donuts. That's a massive one. That almost like replaces Uno for us. My wife's
that game gets pretty intense play at our house.
Doesn't it? Too. Yeah, it's just so much fun. And you know, again, my son can't read yet. But, you know, he's got a strategy. He just picks chocolate donuts, man. And he's won a ton of games just picking the stinking chocolate donuts.
Yes, our right? son, who is not quite four, like, he figured out how to match up the numbers. Right.
Yeah.
And he picks donut holes.
Yep.
And if donut holes aren't out, he picks whatever looks fun.
Yep.
He is an agent of chaos.
Totally. Totally.
he rarely wins, but he's... never in last place.
Right.
And he doesn't care about not, because he doesn't care. Yeah, he's playing a game. He doesn't care about winning at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't, and that's, like I said, as a parent gamer too, like I've just kind of adopted that mantra too. It's like, I don't even care if like, you know, if a 5-year-old slaughters me by 20 points, like I'm doing something right. It's more for me. It's more about the experience of just having fun. Even when I play with, you know, some of my friends and stuff, and like we game on Saturday nights with my wife and friends, and you know, we have the adult time and bust out the wine and craft beer and play, and just, I don't care. Yeah, I want to win, but it's just more fun getting together with friends and just playing awesome games.
Yeah, I had my moment where I realized all of my faults, and I realized that I don't care so much about having lost a game, but I hate the process of losing.
Yes, totally. Yeah, especially when you're so close.
Yeah. So
like, I have a friend that's like a total strategist. Like, he's like 10 turns ahead thinking, you know, and we play Clank a lot, and like anytime I've gotten to beat him, it's just like, yes, just stand up and do like the little silly dance, like, gotcha, finally. Yeah.
You got to learn the floss so you can do the floss.
What is the floss?
You know,
cool as all these hip kids, you know.
Yeah.
When we're done recording, you should look up the backpack kid.
The backpack kid.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So this kid, the backpack kid, is a social media sensation. Invented this dance move called the floss.
Huh.
Well, I don't even know if
now
he called
it
that.
The floss,
anyway, he invented this dance move. Katy Perry saw him and had him come on when she performed on SNL.
Dude, that's awesome.
But it really blew up when the guys who made Fortnite included the floss in one of the victory dances.
Okay. I think I might have heard some coworkers talking about this.
My daughter, that's her.
She
does that dance.
Our kids learn from their friends at school.
Right. She does that dance at the baseball games that we go to.
Oh, my Lord.
The Futures League baseball games. She just gets out there and starts doing the floss. And so, of course, I had to learn how to do the floss because I wasn't going to get upstaged by my daughter.
There you go.
You still get upstaged by your daughter.
Yeah. Anyway,
now you're just going
to
embarrass
her. So when you're doing your silly little, now you got to do the floss. You can add it to the sprinkler and the lawnmower.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. And I am like, I cannot dance. So like when
I think that's what all these like things like the sprinkler and the lawnmower are for, is for the people who have no functional rhythm of their own.
You know, I can headbang and like, you know, throw up the metal horns and pump my fists like in tandem 4/4 timing to, you know, to music. But yeah, when it comes to dancing. Yeah. Not my bag. I do my best at the daddy-daughter dance every year, so.
I mean, that's really all you can ask for.
Right, yep. So. Just, yep, give it a shot. Growth mindset, just try.
Exactly.
Well, all right, I mean, I think that's all we have for questions for you. Is there anything that you'd like to share with the listeners of the Family Gamers podcast before we stop recording?
Oh, my gosh. No, it's just been a blast talking to you guys. Love to be on. It's awesome to be on the show here. Love what you guys are doing. We're, you know, a part of such a fun community, and it's awesome when you find a group of people that are just super positive and, you know, love what they're doing, you know, and it's just a lot of fun, you know. Enjoying, like you said, we were talking earlier, it's like a total board game renaissance of, you know, everything, you know, coming through. It's just so much content, you know, coming through all at once. So it's hard to kind of sift through. So it's nice to, you know, podcasters like you guys, you know, put stuff together so people can find, you know, especially like, you know, there's a nice niche here, you know, family games, you know, a lot of other shows are just talking about all the heavy Euro stuff. And, you know, I'm on the lookout for what I can play with my family and my kids and, you know, enjoy the time I spend with them.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's a lot. It's a whole lot of fun. It's a little bit crazy sometimes. It's a lot of work.
Sometimes.
A lot of work. Always. But it's a lot of fun. So we definitely appreciate you helping us out.
Oh man, I'm honored.
we look forward to having some more reviews from Nick on the site pretty soon. So thanks for coming, and let's play games with our kids.
You bet.
Hello Andrew and Anitra, it's Max Davey here from Games for Families. When you had me on a few weeks ago, you were very kind enough to call me your UK equivalent. But actually, that's not quite true. I'm not nearly as productive, as insightful, or as hardworking as you are in promoting our hobby. I think you do a fantastic job. I'm always looking forward to new episodes, and I think getting to 100 episodes, still growing, still interacting with people, and still just being this real positive force for gaming out there is a fantastic achievement, and I look forward to 100 more episodes, talking to you again, and another few years of great fun and family gaming. Thank you very much.
I'm here with Dave Smith.
Hi.
No relation to Andrew and Anitra Smith. But Dave has written one review so far for the Family Gamers, and we thought we would include him in this little project we're doing.
Yes, thanks for including me, even though I've only written one thing.
Oh, you plan to write more, right?
I do.
So
yeah.
We're good.
Got a game right here. I'm hoping to write something
more. So we'll just get right into it. Dave, what is your earliest memory of playing games?
Yep. So my parents somehow, I think they were into games. Like, they were big card players, and my mom really liked Scrabble, and so they were gamers. Not to nearly the level I'm at now, but they were gamers for what it was like in the 70s to be gamers.
Okay.
And my dad even went so far when I was probably 10-ish, I'm not sure when, but he started buying me Avalon Hill bookcase games when I was a kid. So I got a really a big jump start into the gaming world. He bought me Acquire. If you've ever played that one, that's an old classic Avalon Hill game. And he even bought me this crazy game called Starship Troopers. And looking back now, even where I'm at now in gaming, I wouldn't play it because it's too complicated. This is a game where you have those little square chits and there's numbers all over them, and they're super small, like a centimeter square, and it's super complicated. One person plays the bugs and one person plays the space marines, and you have to map out where things are on this complicated hex system. And I wouldn't want to play it now because it's too complicated. My dad bought it for me when we were 10. I was 10 or 12 or whatever. And so I really got a huge lightning jump into the complicated board gaming world when I was just, you know, a kid.
That's pretty amazing. Did it drop off when you were a teenager, young adult, or have you always stayed with it?
I got into role-playing games as a teenager. I played a ton of Stratego and Monopoly and Risk, as you can imagine. But there, my next-door neighbor across the street, we literally would play, he would come over after school and we would play six games of Monopoly in 45 minutes.
Wow.
He would be moving his piece while I was moving my piece. We'd be grabbing money, grabbing property. We could play one game of Monopoly. Okay, you got this. I give up. You win. Let's start over. And we'd reset the game and we would just crank through Monopoly games. It was pretty comical looking back on it. I could tell you any place on the Monopoly board where it is relative to all the other properties.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
So, but then it did taper off when I got to be a teenager and started going to parties and got into drinking and stuff. And so that was, I was still into games in the background a little bit and I was willing to play them, but it definitely got muted when I got dragged into a lot of the more typical high school girls and drinking and parties and stuff. And yeah.
So how did you get back into it as a
Funny, the thing that dragged me out of it was actually the thing that got me back into it. Because in college, I really developed kind of a drinking problem, and it started to mess up my life in big ways. In fact, the woman I'm married to now, I almost lost her because I drank too much one night and we got into a big fight. And so I decided I was going to stop drinking. Okay. And so I filled the void of time back with games. And there was, you know, I went to an engineering school, Worcester Polytech, and so there's a lot of smart guys that are willing to play strategy games at WPI. And
I feel like that has probably always been true at WPI.
Yeah. So I when I stopped drinking, I got back into games. In specific, the Euro Rails crayon games was one game we got into. Titan, let's see, Cosmic Encounter was another one. Junta, there was a lot of games in college that were sort of there in the background, but then when I quit drinking, we started playing more of them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, you heard it here first, kids. Just say no to drugs and say yes to games.
Yeah, that's a good message.
It seems silly to say this, but how did you start writing for the Family Gamers?
I
think the answer is basically, yeah. Amber and I came up and accosted you and said, you play lots of games, how would you like to write some reviews?
Yeah, it's a little bit backwards from that, because I really liked getting to know you and Andrew, and I really liked coming over to your house to play games. And, you know, we got to know each other through BBC, our church that we're actually doing the interview at right now. And so I started to hear that you guys had a backlog of games to review. And I was like, I like writing. I like games. How can I help? You know, and so I felt like I was dragging the helping aspect out of you guys, because you weren't like really petitioning me so much.
Yeah, well, that happens. Sometimes you get so busy that you're
too busy to delegate, right?
Yeah, exactly. and then the last thing we want to talk about is, what kind of games do you like to play with your family now? What kind of games do you like to play with your kids?
Yeah.
Your kids are quite a bit older than ours.
Yeah. So my favorite game to play with my family is probably the most complicated game they're willing to play, which doesn't go as far as I would like. My favorite game is Imperial, which is like a 2 to 3 hour game. I like more complicated games, but it's tough to get them to be interested in those. So I really I shop around to try to find games that I think are on the edge of complexity that I would like, but they would still be willing to play. So it changes, it morphs over time. There was a time where Trinity loved playing Dungeon Lords, which takes Dungeons and Dragons and flips it back around, and you're the dungeon, creating the dungeon and hiring monsters and managing the dungeon and building the dungeon.
Okay.
And you're fighting against the adventurers. It's a comical thing. It's the guy who created Codenames, Vlada Tvata. He designed that. He's designed a lot of good games. So Trinity loved that one. There was a time where another Vlada Tvata game, Tora liked Galaxy Trucker, she was into that.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So those are both pretty complicated games. They're not as into games as much. So it's tough.
They're in kind of those teenage years,
yeah.
Right? Where other things are competing for their time and attention more.
Yep. Anything that's not peers, hanging out with peers or interacting with peers or screens, it's tough to get them into. But, I just got Potion Explosion, and Trinity's been liking that one. There was a game called, an obscure game most people don't know, called Magical Athlete, which they were both into for a little bit. Tora always likes playing Set. She always likes playing Spot It. And, Trinity's been more changing over time, but... we just bought Seasons from you guys.
Yep.
And she really likes that. She loves Seasons. She loves the elements aspect. She loves the card drafting aspect.
It's a really neat game.
Yeah.
We traded it to you because to our table.
Yeah.
So.
Sharon also likes Set. She likes Bananagrams. She still likes Settlers. She's a little bit more picky and choosy now of what she'll play. She she'll play Imperial with my older friends that I have over like once a year for my birthday or something. Yeah. She'll play Imperial, and humor me. But she's a little picky and choosy about what she'll play, but she is a really good gamer. Like we just played Potion Explosion yesterday, and she just learned the game and crushed me and Trinity by like 10 points me and like 25 points Trinity, and she had just learned the game.
Well, honestly, Potion Explosion is one of those games I love because it like a 4-year-old can play it and just enjoy making the explosions and just right. have fun with it.
Yeah.
Or you can go, completely to the other end and make it very strategic and how can I block other people and get the most potions and
it has a cool layer. Yeah. I love games like that where it has all the levels of depth where you can be a real gamer and get into it, but anyone can play.
Yeah.
And Codenames is like that. Sharon likes Codenames as well. And is pretty really good at that too.
Yeah.
She's good at Imperial. When we play Imperial, she's diplomatic and she maneuvers people to help her and then leaves them behind when she needs to. But does it all in a nice way, and so she's very diplomatic. There's some games we've played where there's a lot of diplomacy needed, and she's just a master at like teaming up with people, but then like making they feel like they're coming along for the ride, and then it's like, oh no, I won.
By the way.
Yeah.
Well, that was great. Thank you very much for your time, Dave.
Sure.
And we look forward to seeing many more reviews.
I look forward to writing some. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. This is Stephen Dutzman. I am the editor-in-chief of EngagedFamilyGaming.com. And I am also the host of Engage, a family gaming podcast. But more importantly, today, I am the good friend of Andrew and Anitra, the family gamers. I met these guys randomly through the internet because we both had similar interests. We ran similar podcasts that covered some of the same stuff. And for a while, it was a little rocky, I think, because people kept confusing us. But I mean, eventually they figured out because, I'm taller, but that's okay. I am sending in this recording because I want to congratulate you guys on your 100th episode. It is a huge accomplishment. It's a lot of work to put these shows out week in and week out to craft it as carefully as you do, to have the awesome interviews that you do, and to do that while maintaining, raising great kids. So, congratulations to you guys and congratulations to all you listeners for finding these guys, because, there's a lot of folks out there that don't know. So as I say to my listeners, in honor of their 100th podcast birthday, why don't you find one person, just one, that you think would benefit from their message and get them to listen to the podcast. Just once. Send them an episode that's just about the games that they love or something like that. Send that their way. Because I bet if every one of you did that, double their audience, they'd be pretty happy. So that's one heck of a way to celebrate a 100th episode. So Andrew and Anitra, I thank you for supporting me. And here is to 300 more. You guys have a great day. And don't forget to get your family game on. Bye now.
When we're not recording, getting geeky with Gamer, we're listening to the Family Gamer podcast. Our podcast can be found at GamerLeafGo.com, kind of like PokemonGo.com, but GamerLeaf.com.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, it. We are very, very blessed to be able to work with a lot of really, really cool people who have very, some of them have very different perspectives and views on games and stuff
like
definitely.
That.
And I know, Dave really, really wants to look at those more like meaty strategy stuff. He loves the I pick, you choose mechanic, which I like, but I'm not crazy about, which is great because it's a pretty popular mechanic right now.
Yeah.
And then
I mean, Nick is just playing tons of casual games with his extended family because a lot of them aren't gamers.
Yeah.
And then Corey and I are like practically the same person. So whatever.
Just about, yeah.
But I mean, it really is. We are very, very thankful to all three of those guys for their contributions to the website.
So why don't we talk about some of the same questions between you and me?
Sure. That makes sense. Let's do it.
So
let's do it.
Earliest memory of gaming with your family?
I don't know. You know, I was thinking about this while we were talking to the guys, and I don't know if I could really concretely give you like my earliest memory of a game.
That's okay. But I don't think I could either.
But what I can give you is the game that I remember playing the most.
Mm-hmm.
Like the game that I have, the game that I bought a copy of last year because I was nostalgic about playing it with my mom.
Would that be Mealborn?
That game is Mealborn, right. So this is a French game about road racing, like in cars. And basically you're playing mileage cards to travel a certain distance. Mm-hmm. And then you can play hazard cards on your opponents, like you're out of gas, you have a flat tire, all these things. But then there's one of each, like...
there's like a protection
superpower.
Card. Yeah.
Like, yeah, so there's a lot of cards that are like, oh, you have a spare, so you play the spare card, and then you can keep going and getting more miles and stuff like that. But there's one of each one of the hazards, there's like the superpower, like impervious tires or never-ending fuel or whatever
that
you can play, and then that hazard would never affect you anymore,
yeah.
Right? And that's it. I mean, it's a pretty basic game. I mean, it's luck-based. There's not a ton of strategy to it.
Yeah.
But it's really... I don't know. I just played it with my mom a lot. It was just a game that clicked with us. And
sure.
So that's it. Mealborn.
I mean, we were one of those families that had a board game shelf that was stacked high enough that at one point I remember my parents telling me, you know what? Let's take the kid games off of here and you keep the kid games in your room because the games are going to fall over.
That sounds familiar.
A little bit. But... I don't know what my earliest memory of board gaming is, but I do remember playing a lot of Monopoly. I remember playing a lot of Racco and a lot of Troke.
Mm-hmm.
And oh man, I loved the Great Blizzard game, which my mom brought over to play with the kids like a month or two ago now.
That's the Rochester specific game, right?
Yeah, well, there's a Rochester version, a Syracuse version, a Buffalo version, I think.
Oh, you Western New Yorkers.
Yeah.
This is a game basically about the Blizzard of 76? Is it the Blizzard 78? Of
78?
78?
Maybe?
I can't remember.
I don't know.
I wasn't alive.
It was before I was born, but I loved this game because it's your basic roll and move. You're traversing the board to get to these five different errands you have to run.
Mm-hmm.
But the board is double-sided. So as you land in different spaces, you have to pull from this deck of cards. And some of them are positive, and some of them are... you know, mildly negative, but somewhere hidden in that deck is the Blizzard Strikes card.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens, you make a note of where everybody is on the board, take the pawns off and flip the board over and then put them back on the same spot. And it goes from the sunny side, which is pretty open, pretty standard traversal, to the Blizzard side where nearly every square is a hazard of some sort. But there are also ice slicks where you can hit at one end and then slide all the way to the other end.
Sure.
For faster travel.
Nice.
So I loved this game as a kid. I now understand as a parent why my parents didn't really want to play it with me very often. But it was definitely one of my favorites.
It probably had a lot of this like similar to Candyland kind of mechanics to it, I'm guessing. Or like snakes and ladders or chutes and ladders kind of thing.
There's a lot of luck involved, and it's one of those games that takes probably twice as long as it needs to. By the end, you just want it to be over. So
I get it.
Yeah. So I definitely did pretty much stop board gaming when I was a teenager. Had lots of other interests. And once I got to college, I discovered actual video games that I could play for more than 20 minutes at a time.
And boys.
I didn't discover boys. Boys just happened to be the route to play video games.
And that's how I won her, ladies and gentlemen. Awesome video games.
No, not quite. It was WPI. I mean, almost all my friends were guys. But I think around the time we were finishing up school, a friend introduced you and I to Catan. I think we started there.
Yeah, I guess I don't.
And shortly after, moved to Ticket to Ride.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty similar for me, actually. Yeah. Gaming, board gaming, really was sort of something that was along for the ride as I grew up.
Yeah.
But it's not like I was all about board games and then went away from board games and then came back to board games. They were just kind of there a little bit, but they never really became something greater until, maybe eight years ago or so. I did in college. I definitely played some D&D and some role playing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was really
That's true.
The
I got
bigger,
introduced to that in college too.
Yeah. That was a bigger manifestation of analog gaming to me than board gaming was for a few years.
Sure.
I think that there was certainly an era starting with my dad coming downstairs and saying, there's something weird in our room. Can you come take a look at it? And me going up and seeing that they had bought and plugged in a Nintendo Entertainment System. From there...
Nice parents.
It was... I mean, there's a few memories that I have that are really vivid. That was one of them. So then all the way up through, you know, the Super NES with The Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past was the first big purchase that I made with my own money. All the way up through, we got an N64 for Christmas. I waited in the midnight line at Walmart to buy my GameCube.
I remember that.
You know, up through to the Wii when I was working at GameStop when the Wii came out.
We were newlyweds.
We were. Oh, man.
That was a long time ago. you can leave that one in.
I will. You know, and just kind of like all of that. And then it was sometime after the Wii. Wii U was kind of a weird time for Nintendo.
It was time for us because we had very young children.
Really young. But by then I transitioned over to PS2, PS3, Xbox 360, yeah, stuff like that. And so video games.
And we were starting to play more board games by then.
Well, not yet. And not at that point. Maybe a little bit, but not like it is now. And then the board game started to really come on full force. But it was, you know, it was like five staples for a long time. You know, Catan, Ticket to Ride, Puerto Rico.
Yep.
Right.
Apples to apples.
Apples to apples.
That was our party game staple for a long time.
Right. And that was it. It was this fixed
and likes categories. Yeah.
Thing. And then, yeah, probably about 5 to 8 years ago, I think the bug hit, probably about 5 years ago, because that would have been when Claire was four and we started, you know, we picked up Robot Turtles. That was probably when it all started.
It was probably around the time
when we kickstarted Robot Turtles. And the rest is history.
For what it's worth, when I look back on my childhood, I think the reason that I was a lot more into board games than a lot of other kids I knew is because my parents were older, mm-hmm, and I was an only child. So it was a good way for me to play and have fun with my family.
Sure.
Because my parents weren't going to do anything active with me.
I almost wish that I played more board games with my brother and sister because I had like built-in playmates, I guess. But
there's also a big age gap.
Big, yeah.
But you play board games with her now.
That's true. Yeah, we sure do. She was instrumental to our shock presentation of a Disney World trip.
Yeah.
So, good times.
So, we asked everybody else, how did you get involved to start writing for the Family Gamers? Since we are the Family Gamers, let's twist this around a little bit. I'm not sure we've talked recently on the podcast about how we started this whole thing.
Yeah, I guess not. So, a long time ago, there was a, you know, I talked about how we played a lot of video games. There was a Christian video game website called the Hardcore Christian Gamers. Yeah. and somehow I kind of got myself affiliated with them, and I ended up doing some video games journalism for them. Mm-hmm. At that point, I'll just say the PAX East media requirements were less stringent,
sure,
than they are now, and I managed to get into PAX as media, and it really, I mean, that first time you attend like an industry level event, and it's not an industry level event like E3, but even a PAX as media, it's a rush. Like it's a you're chasing your next high, kind of like, this is a different experience because I'm interacting with people on a different level. I've always been cerebral about games, but I have a badge that says that I'm supposed to talk to you about stuff in a much more serious and informed way. And I'm equipped to do that just because of the way that I am. And it was really, it was just a totally different experience. And
that's funny because I can totally see where that comes from. But for me, by the time I worked up to that, it was starting to feel almost old hat, like still exciting. But I've actually only had one event so far where I went in as media, and that was PAX Unplugged.
That's not true. You go in as media to Boston Fig.
Oh, all right. Because I was going to say, like, the past 2 years at Boston Fig, mm-hmm. we've definitely been going around
yep.
and...
Yeah, we're press.
Talking to people. But, like, it's...
We know so many people at this point at Boston Fig, it feels like a family event.
Well, it's that, and it's that, you know, I had been doing it long enough at Boston Fig that... Uh-huh. You know, the first big one, PAX Unplugged, I'm like, okay, this is just the same thing except bigger and with more people who actually make money doing this stuff rather than, like, buy my game, please?
Yeah.
Please?
Well, and I mean, you got to drink from the fire hose because your first major convention, you were hosting a panel.
Yeah, so. It was kind of a lot.
But, you know, I mean, the thing that really got me was I saw a game at the first convention that I went to as press that was basically made for me. And that was Contrast by Compulsion Games.
Oh, man. That was a beautiful game.
It was a beautiful game. The music, I mean, that's like, I listen to a lot of different kinds of music, but that kind of like smoky blues style.
Jazz, yeah.
That, oh, jazz, smoky jazz blues. That's like, I love that style, like almost noir style music, I guess. Mm-hmm. I just love it. Love it, love it, love it. The game was gorgeous. The mechanics were unique. It was like, I don't know how many people were actually at Compulsion Games at that point, but they were this tiny little studio. And the idea that I could walk up and be like, this game is freaking amazing. And the press person was like, just a moment, I'll get you the CEO of the studio. And I was like, what? Yeah. And that kickstarted it. Boom, I was done. And so I did video games journalism for HCG for a while. And then I met a bunch of people from another site, the Married Gamers, who were a little bit more established, and HCG was kind of, you know, falling apart.
Started to taper off.
Yeah, a little bit. It's actually still around, but whatever. And so I went over to the Married Gamers for a while, and I did that a lot. And then, I mean, they had probably 10 writers, and I kind of got to the point, and this is sort of where that transition happened, where I said, you know what? Like, what if I and this other guy who both like board games, what if we start covering board games for the site? And they were all over it, and they thought it was really, you know, a good idea. And so we started doing board games journalism. And this is really, honestly, right at the beginning of Kickstarter, like, really being
the ramp
a
up.
Force
yeah.
in the industry. I mean, it was around and it was established, but it wasn't a force
yeah.
in the board game industry the way it is now. And so getting Kickstarter previews to roll in was easy, right? And so I started doing that for a while, and then Merry Gamers started tapering off, and so I kind of kicked my own thing around for basically a couple of years with, you know, various friends, and scheduling got hard, and I was like, you know what, I need to podcast with somebody that I live with.
Well, so you were still doing the occasional writing for the Married Gamers when we started up the Family Gamers.
Yeah, but it was I was at that time basically the only person writing for the Married Gamers.
You had cut back a bunch at that point, but you were still writing for them, and so some of our earliest reviews, actually, if you look on the Family Gamers reviews, our earliest couple of reviews are Kickstarter previews and not written by you, because you basically said, look, I have this Kickstarter preview, but I'm already writing about it for the Married Gamers. Anitra, Corey, can you guys write something, you know, original and unique for our brand new website?
Right. And that's kind of how it all started. Yeah. And that's how the Family Gamer started. And then I put a microphone in front of your face, and you've got that.
And I learned how to talk better.
You've got that radio sparkle.
I guess I do now. I don't think I did 100 episodes ago.
I don't know. I have a picture that I took of you. It must have been 10 episodes in, and you look pretty comfortable behind that microphone, young lady.
It was like 3 episodes in, but yeah.
Whatever.
I was all an act.
But anyway, that's it. That's how we got here. And so about a year ago, we started actually releasing a weekly podcast instead of a bi-weekly podcast. But we do that whole interview on the odd thing. So, I mean, I think we're at a style that works for us right now. It's, you know, we when we did that survey and we got a lot of feedback and stuff, we definitely tried to adjust some things. And so we're trying to differentiate our interviewees a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, to bring more interesting non-commercial content, I guess, to our listeners. And that's been fun. I mean, we've been able to really kind of explore different things, but we'll still get, you know, Kickstarter folks on from occasion if we really like what we're seeing. Vince is a super cool guy, and that Jetpack Joyride game, like, I would not mind having
super
him on
cool game
on the podcast. So, that's sort of in a nutshell how we ended up here, huh?
Pretty much, yeah. Our last question for everybody else is, what games do you like to play with your family or with your kids? I think since we talk about that every week, we probably don't need to answer
We've probably covered that one. So
we got a few last things to wrap up the podcast. Mm-hmm. One is some back talk.
We love this stuff. When we get emails and we're not expecting them and they've got some cool content in them, basically, it's great. It's just so fun to interact with our community, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Instagram. We do a lot of that stuff too.
Yeah.
But especially when you get emails. You know, remember when you were a kid and you'd open the mailbox and somebody wrote you a letter and it was just awesome? Like
that's kind of how it feels.
Email has become that thing now. So,
well, especially something that's not a form email, you know, the equivalent of not junk mail.
Right. Exactly. So,
you actually want to talk to me.
Yeah. So we won't take it from our kids, but we love it from you guys. Joseph R. sent us an email about going to Chick-fil-A. So, did we mention Chick-fil-A? I mean, it was so...
I'm sure we must have
because
at some
we go to Chick-fil-A quarterly, and we went last week, and then we got this email.
And I actually noticed the same thing that we got the email about and decided not to talk about it on the podcast, but now we will.
Yeah.
So here's what Joseph said. We just went to lunch at Chick-fil-A, and the toy in the kids' meal was an oversized Rory Story cube. The instructions with the cube say, collect all 9, which means we'll be eating there a lot in the near future. Am I too ashamed to order a kid's meal for myself? Time will tell.
Well, the answer is you should not be ashamed to order a kid's meal for yourself because as delicious as that breaded chicken is, it's got about 1 billion calories in it. So if you eat something a little smaller, it's probably okay. Well, also, you get Rory Story Cube, so I mean, hey.
And the kid's meal comes with fries, so just the right amount of waffle fries.
If you're getting Chick-fil-A sauce, there is no right amount of waffle fries.
Eat all the waffle fries.
All the waffle fries. That Chick-fil-A sauce is so good. Or, as there has been a video of this, dipping the waffle fries in the Chick-fil-A vanilla ice cream. Serve. Oh my. So good.
I did notice when we were there a week or so ago that their toy in the kids' meal is an oversized Rory Story Cube, which I think is awesome. I love that partnership. I think I like it better than the McDonald's toys right now, which are also board game themed.
Mm-hmm.
And give me one quality item rather than a bunch of shoddy ones.
I'm 100% in agreement with you on that one. Totally 100%.
So I think that's it for the show. Wait! We have a giveaway.
We have 3 giveaways.
We are giving away 3 awesome, fabulous board game prize packs.
Yes. So the way that you can win these is the same way we do all of our giveaways. We have a Rafflecopter giveaway embedded all over the place. You can go to our Facebook page. You can go to our Twitter page. You can go to the blog post for this podcast. We'll be sharing this link all over the place. We want you to share this link all over the place.
You can find it easily by just going to thefamilygamers.com. There'll be a link to it right on the homepage.
Right.
We're good.
You want to burn through a list of all the games that we're giving away? We've collected these games into 3 separate prize packs, but this list, it's a doozy.
Yeah. We've got several copies of Stir Fry 18. We've got the NFL Fanzy Dice.
This is a new game that is either, I think it's debuting technically at Gen Con.
Ooh.
From our friend Andy Jeremiah.
So you'll get it right about the same time that everybody else gets to see it. That's pretty cool. We've got a Card Caddy. We've got a Spot It. We've got Problem Picnic, Strawberry Ninja, Loot Letter, Pigment. One of our lucky winners will be getting an Animo starter deck when they get shipped out to the Kickstarter backers. Mm-hmm. We've got Pirate Ships, Knock Your Blocks Off. We've got a Top Trumps in there. And we're giving away a Steam code for Sumer.
Right. So that Sumer is the board game that's a video game
board
that we talked about a lot. We talked about it on the show that we did with Steven Dutzman a little bit ago.
We'll do a written review of it eventually.
But it's great. It's a board game that's a video game. So yeah. All of that stuff is getting given away through this raffle cop giveaway. You
to
have
three
to owe
lucky
it to yourself
people.
To head on over there and enter. And I mentioned a bunch of places where you could go. I mentioned our Facebook page.
Facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA.
Right. You can also go to our Twitter where we'll share the link.
@FamilyGamersAA.
Instagram.
I don't think we can share the giveaway there, but it's @FamilyGamersAA.
So those are all the places where you can go to check out the giveaway. But there's also other places online where you can get a hold of us. We try to be super, super reachable. So we mentioned Facebook. You can also go to our Facebook community.
Yep. Which you can get to through our Facebook page or by going to thefamilygamers.com/community.
This is episode 100. We've done 100 of these things. It's amazing. Thank you guys so much for supporting us for 100 episodes. We hope to do lots and lots more.
We really appreciate your listenership.
Hugely so. And the way that this can grow is if you make sure to subscribe to the show. You make sure to tell your friends about the show. Leave a little, just a quick text review of the show on Apple Podcast or Google Play or whatever your podcast subscription service is. It's the way that we get kind of the news out about what we do every day. Like literally every day I talk to someone and they're like, huh, that's a cool niche in the
podcasting
industry.
Or in,
and there are people that genuinely need this kind of information.
Right. Yeah, I talk to people on a regular basis, you know, in the school pickup line or in the grocery store or whatever, and be like, oh, yeah, oh, you're looking for games to play with your kids? Let me tell you about
that. Right. So there's tons, I mean, all over the place, there are people that that really we can help out with what we do. And so you should let them know that we're here to do exactly that. We're also thankful to our sponsor for 2018, Wild East Games.
You can check them out online at wildeastgames.com or find them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Wild East Games.
We are proud members of the Dice Tower Network.
Thank you, Dice Tower Network.
You guys are the best. Woo!
And I think that's it for the show today.
So we got some friends to help us out to remind all of you.
Play it!